you basically can't sue someone for talking shit if you're what they call a public figure. Like, I'm sure you've come across this. Like,
yep.
People could say whatever the hell they want.
It's also the biggest problem with social media, though, too, is that every keyboard warrior in the world has a microphone that people listen to. So it's like you can just propagate bullshit, and if it sticks, it sticks.
It's tough because everybody's a critic and everybody's a Monday morning quarterback. And it was like, I'd built what I'll still say today is, I think, in Hollywood, the most prolific change that Hollywood had ever seen. And like, I fought the world because nobody wanted it to happen there. And I remember I was telling this to Nigel last podcast. I remember Mel Gibson calling me up because I'd helped him when he went through his really hard time, and nobody in Hollywood would talk to him. And I did. And I was Jewish, and people who weren't Jewish wouldn't talk to him because of his anti-Semitic supposedly comments he made. And he said, dude, I didn't even get as much shit as, he's like, well, who'd you piss off? They're rewriting the same story over and over every day. And it was like, I don't want to get out of bed. I remember like, I like pull the covers off and just dreaded looking at my phone to see like what was published. That's the hardest time ever. Cause the whole, we were talking about earlier, failing for yourself is like, you fail for yourself. But when you fail in front of the whole world and you trip in front of the whole world.
It's all you can see.
Right? And you think it's like over because you think like, oh, the whole world just saw me fail. I literally, like, everybody knows me as a failure. I mean, that's how I felt. I don't know if you...
Yeah, no, it feels like that.
When I went anywhere, even though nobody probably was saying anything about me, I felt like, oh, they're all talking about me. They're all talking about what a failure I am. Did you feel that way? Do you remember?
Well, yeah, it's like I'm on social media, so it's like anywhere I went, anyone that had TikTok would just see me, and that's like the first thing that they would say.
I mean, in your case, the whole world was actually talking about you everywhere you went. In my case, I just thought they were. So okay, you took that and in a, obviously nobody expected, I think you'd always, you at some point said you were never going to fight again, and all of a sudden you decided not only were you going to fight, but you were going to fight in the hardest sport there ever was, and definitely the most gruesome, and definitely the most physically challenging, and definitely the most dangerous, in bare knuckle boxing, which is boxing with no gloves. You know, obviously having done social media and regular fights, and you know, did all of Jake's original fights, like, you know, we picked opponents with Jake that were, you know, people who had been retired in their 40s. Jake was in his young 20s. They were kind of out of shape. They had lost their last 5 or 6 fights. They had never boxed, so it was somewhat of a fair fight. You came out, and I don't think anybody's ever did it before. I don't know if anybody will ever do it again, but you came out and said, no, I want to pick a fighter in his prime. It's 3-0, who's about my age, who is actually a bare knuckle, not just a boxer, but an actual bare knuckle boxer, 3-0, named the Cut Man, and fight him in real life.
I thought it was the worst idea ever.
Like, what was going through your head? Like, tell me how the failure of in front of the whole world led to you doing something that, like, if you walked in that ring and lasted 3 seconds and got knocked out, the world would have given you respect.
That's what my brain was thinking when I went in there. It was like a win-win situation for me. I had the balls to step into like a bare knuckle boxing ring against somebody in their prime. If I lost, it was expected. If I won, shocks the world. I remember seeing clips of bare knuckle, like with Mike Perry, Luke Rockhold, like Eddie Alvarez, Chad Mendes, like all the old UFC fighters doing it. And I remember seeing it like all over my timeline because of how gruesome, bloody, and viral like this shit would go.
Yeah.
And I remember telling Brad that I wanted to do it, and he said that it was a dumb idea.
He called me and said, because we, for those of you don't know, we own Bare Knuckle. Brad was actually at more or less Bare Knuckle 1 with me. So, and I still remember he was shaking, because you and Brad have in common that he also grew up fighting a lot.
Well, the adrenaline in that, and when you're in those fights, it's like...
We went to this, we're sitting there, the very first fight. And I just remember being in the front row and you hear this, right?
Which you don't hear every contact.
And I looked over and Brad was like, I'm like, you okay? He's like, yeah, I just like feel like I'm in a fight. Like, but tell me, so you took this, the whole world is like, you become a meme. The whole world is like fucking descending down upon you and kind of saying, you know, all right, Bryce, like, ha ha ha, you're the guy who could fight. And now you're stepping in the ring. And tell me about that. What was going through your head, the journey, everything you can remember?
I was so hungry throughout my entire camp, but I trained my ass off. Like actually worked with like Lorenzo Hunt, the 2-time BKFC champ, 185 and 205. He showed me like the difference between boxing and BKFC with like the the little bit of wrestling that you can do. So working with him gained my confidence, but I was so hungry. I wasn't really thinking of G. Perez. I wasn't thinking of the fighter himself. So I wasn't really nervous at all. But then once I had my meal after my weigh-in, and then I was fully like regenerated, I started thinking, I'm like, oh shit, this fight's tomorrow. My nerves are kicking in like crazy. I'm always like antsy, like bouncing my legs, like, oh God, like I'm actually about to do this. Day of the fight comes along, I'm not allowed to leave my dressing room. They're like, you can't walk around. So I was sitting there for about 2.5 hours, just watching all of the fights, watching all these people get their face battered up. I'm trying to get both of you guys in the back room, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I want to do this.
Like, I remember that.
Watching those fights in the locker room was like, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, no.
Like, I wish those weren't on. And then one of the girls who was before Bryce stuck her face in.
I remember she had
those teeth.
She stuck
her face in and said hi, and all of her teeth were gone. Her face looked like she had been through a blender. She's like, don't worry, you'll do great. And I was like, oh my God.
Well, actually, yeah. I remember what she did. She stuck her head in, because I remember I was trying to calm you down. I was giving you military breathing exercises, if you remember. Like, you meditate. And she stuck her head in, and she's like, OnlyFans, here I come. And she had all her teeth gone and bloody, and she was making a joke, but she literally looked like she'd gotten.
Yeah. So no, like the nerves were so fucking heavy there. I was freaking out. Started warming up. The nerves went away for a little bit. And then the guy goes, like every single fight, the guy would come in and say like, all right, you're in three. All right, you're in four fights. All right, you're in two fights. All right, you're next. And it's like so fast. It was going so fast. I was like, oh my God, like I'm about to do this. And I'm sitting there about to do my walkout, shitting bricks, like doing the breathing. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I here? What am I doing? What am I doing?
Dude, you told me, you said, what the fuck am I doing, man? I was like, it's not too late. It's not too late.
You know? And then as I'm doing the walkout, instant character goes back into it. I'm like, I'm in. So I walk out there, I'm doing like this thing. I'm like doing the Conor McGregor walk, but you know, on the inside, shitting bricks. I step in there, I greet you, Dave Feldman, like the refs. And then gave like G a little head nod. I was like, all right, please don't hurt me. Then I'm sitting across from Lorenzo's like behind me as we're like, they're doing the intros. And he's like, all right, you're good. You got this. Remember what we trained for. Breathe. And he's like doing all this shit. And I'm like, okay, I'm more scared of Lorenzo than I am G. Perez. If I lose in front of Lorenzo, he'll probably kick my ass.
It's a good, so then I good got motivation.
And our entire game plan was like move around the ring. And as soon as he comes in, I hit him. And in the first 10 seconds, he came into my range. And that's when I dropped him in the first 10 seconds. And that right there clicked in my head. I'm like, I won. That was all I needed. That's the clip that everybody's going to see. I won.
So then the pressure was off,
yeah.
And then you were just like, oh, now there's no winning.
Yeah, but then he kept fucking hitting me, and I was like, oh, wow, this guy's hitting me really hard. So I remember one time he uppercutted me 4 times in the right eye or in the left eye, and my vision was completely slanted, and I was looking at him, and he was like coming towards me, like while I'm looking at him like this, I'm like, oh my fucking God. I was like, I'm either going to get knocked out right now, or I'm going to foul this guy and like hurt him. So I grabbed him by the legs, picked him up and just threw him. And I was like, all right, I bought myself some time. He's like grabbing the back of his head. I don't remember hitting the back of his head, but he was grabbing the back of his head. I was like, yes, I have time. All right, vision, come back. Cause my vision was still completely slanted. Like he hit my eye in the right spot like 4 times. So my vision was just like sideways.
I was wondering, you know, I never asked you why you did that.
And yeah.
Now I know. Like I remember when you basically wrestle moved him. Yeah. Like,
it was because I couldn't see. The entire first round, I couldn't see.
Wow. So back to before the fight, though. Like, so this is a common theme in your life. You started, so you became the social media star phenomenon because, you know, you basically had kind of, I'll say failed is a broad term on our show, but you failed at, you know, being popular and having friends. And you had all these bullies that you had this just feeling inside that you wanted to change. And as I kind of said, we talked about earlier, if you can't change your outside, change your inside. So you went and created your own world, made your own world using that as your motivation, the failure in high school, right? And you become one of the most famous people in the world and very successful. And then you go to the next level to become a boxer, and you become overnight, like, as you said, the biggest meme, and you know, like you couldn't go anywhere without being the boxing guy that lost, basically. But again, instead of giving up, and that's kind of what the show is about, is for anybody who's ready to give up and thinks like, oh, I failed. Well, you didn't fail. You just had a failure, and success is the things you find between failures and not giving up. And so you turned around, and instead of saying, I'm never fighting again, which you did say for a minute, but you're like, inside you knew, you're like, I got to go do something bigger and harder. So it motivated you to go train so hard that you decided to go into BKFC. And basically, because in your head you won, you actually once again willed it to happen. You took that failure and in your head willed success, and you actually knocked him out and you became a BKFC fighter.
Kind of badass.
Yeah. How's that feel now?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's actually, nobody even mentions the Austin McBroom shit anymore.